C-O-L-G-A-T-E.
Colgate presents The Bill Stern Show, starring John Garfield.
Bill Stern, the Colgate savory man, is far away. This week is his vacation time to rest and play. And for tonight, while he's away to take his place, we're glad to say we'll bring you Mr. John Garfield.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Bill Stern is away on the last week of his vacation. Next Friday night, he'll be back. But in his place tonight, Colgate Shave Cream is proud to present the distinguished actor and motion picture star, John Garfield, who will tell sports stories that are taken from Bill Stern's popular book entitled My Favorite Sports Stories. So here we go. John Garfield, pinch hitting for Bill Stern with sports stories from Bill's book. Ladies and gentlemen, John Garfield.
Good evening. You know, summertime is the time for water sports, and no water sport is more thrilling than crew racing. Tonight, I'd like to tell you the story about a man named Hiram Conybeare, and one of the greatest crew victories in the annals of the University of Washington. In the fall of 1907, the famous Gil Dobie became the new football coach at the University of Washington. Dobie brought along with him a man named Hiram Conybeare, a professional trainer, a famous bicycle racer, who was considered the finest coach in the country, and his only job for Gil Dobie was to condition Washington's football teams. At that time, the Huskies had no regular crew, but some influential alumni became interested in putting crew racing on a formal collegiate basis. Hiram Conybeare heard those rumors about making rowing a big-time sport, and he began to think that Washington might fire him and then hire somebody else who could serve both as rowing coach and football trainer. So Conybeare quickly volunteered to coach Washington's crew, despite the fact that he had never rowed a stroke in his life. But even though he had never seen a crew race before, Conybeare was determined to become the best crewman in America, for if he failed, he knew he'd be through. And so Conybeare spent his time in the university library, reading all about everything he could about rowing. And then from an idea he remembered from his bicycle pedaling days, he set to work on a new stroke, using the full power of the legs. But Washington's crews weren't winning under Conybeare's teaching, and things looked black. Even the future of Washington's rowing seemed to be at stake. And one day, Coach Conybeare called his crew together in the boathouse. The boys were not only tired and disgusted with the Washington rowing situation, but many were openly hostile to Conybeare. Finally, one of them, crew members, spoke up.
Coach, we all know you don't know anything about rowing, and we're fed up with your so-called coaching. Why don't you quit?
It was then that Hiram Conybeare spoke.
Man, I ask you to give me a chance. Stick with me, and I'll stick with you. Yeah. We're on the road to something worthwhile, but don't let me down now. Please give me a chance. Stick with me a little longer.
With that, Coach Conybeare shoveled out of our boathouse inside the crew, who a few moments before were on the verge of mutiny, now remained stunned by their coach's honest and dramatic appeal for help. Then they voted to stand by their coach. A few weeks later, Conybeare took the Huskies to race against the crews of the mighty Stanford and powerful California. Only a handful of Washington rooters were on hand to cheer because they knew Washington didn't have a chance. The day of the race, thousands lined the shore and were amazed when the underdog Washington crew, working with the grace and perfection of a beautiful machine, took the lead, and the Huskies held that lead, catching the water with a long, comfortable stroke, a stroke that had never been used before, a stroke that Hiram Conybeare, the former bicycle racer, the man who knew nothing about rowing, had invented. The underdog Washington crew won that race, and Hiram Conybeare went on to become one of the greatest rowing coaches of all time. From that humble beginning, other Washington crews have gone on to greater power and everlasting rowing glory. And wherever the sport of rowing is coached, you'll find men who have coached or rowed for Washington at the helm. Let's call the roll.
Pennsylvania.
Rusty Kellow.
Rutgers.
Charlie Logg.
Harvard.
Tom Bowles.
California.
Kai Ebright.
Cornell.
Dork Stanford.
And all the glory, all the power of the mighty Washington crew were built on one stroke, the Conybeare stroke, invented and developed by a man who knew nothing about rowing.
John Garfield will be back in just a moment. But first, may I tell you about one of the greatest golfers who ever swung a club, Gene Sarazen. Gene Sarazen gives some tips, not on golf this time, but on Colgate Brushless Shave Cream. Here's what Gene wrote Bill Stern.
Dear Bill, writes Gene Sarazen, maybe there are men who still think they have to use a heavy, greasy shave cream to get results, but not me. I use Colgate Brushless Shave Cream, which, as you say, is light and fluffy. That suits me. It works wonders even on my top whiskers. It's easy to spread, easy to shave with, remains on the job. And what a satisfaction to be able to rinse it off at the finish quick as a wink. Shaving with Colgate Brushless every day is as pleasant as sinking a long putt. Signed, Gene Sarazen.
Yes, Gene Sarazen says something that should interest every shaver. Colgate Brushless Shave Cream is not greasy or heavy. It's light and it's right. And it's made especially for you men with tough beards and tender skin. You'll find Colgate Brushless Shave Cream, being light, is easier to spread, quicker to soften your beard, and keeps moist all the way through a shave. And smooth, no pulling and no after irritation. Not greasy, not heavy. Because it's light, Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions, rinses off in a 1-2-3. It all adds up to Tops in shaving performance. If you don't think it's Tops, send the top of the carton to Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City, Zone 2, New Jersey, and you'll get double your money back. Ask for Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions, tonight. And now back to John Garfield, who tonight is pinch-hitting for Bill Stern. John Garfield.
A few months ago, a famous individual celebrated his 30th birthday, quietly with only his closest friends around him. He's out of the public eye now, but he's still a champion among champions. It is a bit unusual for anybody to be able to retire at 30 and with enough money to be independent for the rest of his life, but he did. As a matter of fact, 10 years ago, the governor of his state said...
As governor of this state, I wish to tell the world that you've done more than any other celebrity in your profession. You've truly made us very, very proud of you. Because of that, and by virtue of the power vested in me as governor, I hereby do declare you to be the number one citizen of our state.
Maybe that was the biggest thing ever. Anything pleased him more than something his boss once told him.
You've done everything I ever asked you to. I know money means nothing to you, but I'd like you to know that you've made over $1 million for me, and I'll never forget it.
Yes, even out here in Hollywood, they knew him well. Clark Gable, one of Hollywood's greatest stars, once wired...
A finer champion could never be found. He'll go down among the immortals.
Lovely ladies of the screen knew him, too. Betty Davis once said...
There are stars in every profession, but they'll ever stand out more vividly in their profession than he did.
Who is this celebrity who could retire at such an early age after making $1 million? Who is this champion who received such world acclaim? Who is he? Well, let's go down to Lexington, Kentucky, where they have erected a bronze plaque in his honor. Let's read the inscription. It says, "To the finest horse the state of Kentucky has ever bred, the immortal man of war, Kentucky's number one citizen." Perhaps the roughest of all professional sports is the prize fight game. We're in the ring, a man has all the skill and science of boxing. He is basically just a super trained animal with a fighting heart. And putting all else aside, it's that fighting heart that makes a champion. That point was proved again last month in Chicago Stadium when a rough and tough youngster from New York's Lower East Side, a fighting exile from his native state, walloped his way to the welterweight champion of the world. Born Thomas Rocco Barbella, known in the world of sports today as Rocky Graziano. Rocky was a tough kid in more ways than one, a slum kid, an ex-juvenile delinquent, who fought almost when he learned to walk on the crowded tenement pavements of Manhattan. His code then, as now, was the code of the streets. No matter how, win. Keep fighting and win. In the professional fight game, Rocky Graziano came up fast, until at last his name was headlined in the biggest boxing arenas in the country. Yes, Rocky Graziano was going places, and next stop would be the welterweight crown. But then things started happening to Rocky Graziano that weren't so good. He lost his first crack at the title with Tony Zale. And then in February, the street code he had altered with the law, Rocky was called into the DA's office for not reporting an offer of a bribe to take a dive. Rocky admitted the facts. A couple of months before, when he was slated to fight cowboy Reuben Shank, a stranger had come into his dressing room in Stillman's famous gym and made the offer. But at that time, he had laughed it off. Fixed fights weren't anything new in that smoke-filled hangout where so many top fighters have trained. For there, in the sleazy atmosphere of smoke and sweat and rosin, there are always guys of every type crowding around trying to get inside information on the fighters. Tin horn gamblers trying to cinch their bets in advance by fixing the outcome of a fight before it happened, if they could. And that's where the bribe offer had been made to Graziano. It wasn't much different from the line of chatter Rocky had heard every day as he pushed his way through the crowd of trainers and punchy old-timers to work out on the corner ring.
How's your condition, Rocky? Think I ought to bet the roll on you?
And Rocky would laugh. Ain't you, Ed? I'm going into the tank. Bet your money on the other boy.
On a level, Rocky. How much you want to take a dive in the fifth round?
Rocky's comeback was always the same. Well, I'll tell you, pal. See me later. But this time, it was different. There was $100,000 involved. The odds were 5-1 on Rocky over Reuben Shank. And the boys were offering Graziano a cool 100 G's to throw the match. Rocky was on the spot, and he knew it. His answer to the stranger was the same kidding evasion. Well, I'll tell you, pal. See me later. But he knew that this time it was either accept the bribe or duck out of the fight. According to the street code of New York slums, you don't call copper. So Rocky didn't report the bribe offer, but he did pull out of the fight by claiming a score back. Later, when the New York State Boxing Commission heard of the incident, Rocky Graziano was barred indefinitely from the New York ring, and a return match with champion Tony Zale was called off. But from other places in the country came invitations for Rocky to fight. And a few weeks ago, in Chicago, the largest indoor crowd in the history of boxing gathered to watch Rocky Graziano get his second chance at the welterweight crown. But for the New York slum kid, there was far more at stake than the crown. There was a cloud still hanging over his head. And since the trouble, there had been whispers in the boxing circles about his courage and his ability to take it.
Okay, he's lost his nerve. Sure, he looks great as his winner. In the last go with Zale, how come he lets him stop the fight in the sixth round? Starts taking a little punishment. I'm telling you, can't take it.
Yes, in more ways than one. And when he stepped into that ring on the night of July 16th, he had been warned that any illegal tactics would disqualify him at once. The eyes of 18,000 fans in the Chicago Stadium and the millions listening over the radio were watching and waiting for the first streak of yo. Strangely enough, the fight was an almost exact duplicate of the first bout the two men had fought last September, but in reverse. This time it was Graziano who was taking a merciless beating for five brutal rounds until, with blood streaming from his left brow and his right eye almost closed, the shaggy-haired Italian literally rose from the floor to batter his way back. A fix? The crowd was on its feet now. No, this was no fix. This was brutal. It was primitive. They had never seen anything like it before. Badly hurt, Graziano was still delivering unbelievable punishment with every blow. He was throwing his gloves like sledgehammers, staggering the champion with smashing rights and lefts. It was no longer a fight. It was a slugfest. Two powerful champions battering each other to a pulp. And with every blow landed by the furious young exile, you could hear the code of the streets echoing, "Fight! Keep fighting and win!" Zale staggered against the ropes. The referee took one look at the groggy title holder and waved his hands crosswise to stop the fight. Rocky Graziano was the new welterweight champion of the world. No, there was no question of his gameness this time. The dead-end kid had literally proved himself a dead-game guy with a fighting heart that can't be fixed.
That's quite a story, John Garfield. Come to think of it, an awful lot like the picture you just finished making.
Yes, it is, Don. But the amazing thing is, we were already in the middle of shooting an art picture last February when Graziano's story first broke in the paper.
Well, that's certainly a coincidence, isn't it?
And that's what we thought at the time. You see, the script of Body and Soul was started over a year ago.
Another instance when truth so closely parallels fiction. By the way, John, I understand the picture has some of the greatest fight sequences in it ever filmed.
They pack a lot of excitement, all right. At the sneak previews, the theater audiences got so excited they forgot where they were and they stood up and cheered the fighters as though they were in a boxing stadium.
The women, too?
Well, if anything, they were more exciting than the men. From their reaction, I'd say the national interest in boxing is something terrific.
Well, John, that's a picture I've got to see.
That's a deal, Don. I'll save you two on the aisle for the opening.
John Garfield will be back in just a moment. But first, see if this doesn't make good sense. If you have a tender skin and a barbed wire beard, then listen to this. Specialist the Shave Cream is made for you. It's not heavy or greasy, it's light and it's right. Yes, Colgate Brushless is light and fluffy, so it's easier to spread, quicker to work into the base of your beard. And Colgate Brushless stays moist and active, holds your whiskers upright, so your razor can cut clean and close without any pulling or nicking. Finally, because it's not greasy or gummy, but light and fluffy, Colgate Brushless Shave Cream rinses off your razor and face in a flash. Available in jars or tubes. How about a champion shave with Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions? It's light and it's right. Now back to John Garfield.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was my pleasure to pinch it for Bill Stern tonight. Bill is finishing his vacation and we'll be back with you next Friday night. So may I, on behalf of Colgate Shave Cream, extend to you all a cordial invitation to tune in next Friday evening, same time, same stations. Good night.
Thank you, John Garfield.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream man, has been away. Tonight and tis vacation time for rest and play. I'm sure you'll all be glad to learn next Friday night he will return. So tune in then and hear Bill Stern. C-O-L-G-T-E.
John Garfield appeared on this program tonight through courtesy of Roberts Productions. The Stern Show came to you tonight from Hollywood. Don Stanley speaking. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.